My name is Kelvin Downs. I'm an alcoholic. So today, grace of God, miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, excellent sponsorship. I've been sober since October 10th, 1996, and for that, I'm truly grateful. Tell you that I've been asked today to share a little bit with you about judgment, a little bit with you about how I've seemed to have found a solution for that judgment, how I've been able to do a few things through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, through some specific actions in Alcoholics Anonymous, to have found relief from something that I believe kills people like me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know about anybody else, but I'm the kind of guy that if I'm going to be up at 7 a.m., my mind gets up about 2 hours prior to that. And it's already running by the time 7 a.m. hits. And my mind does more than just run. It does push-ups, you know? I mean, that thing's out there, and it's working. I mean, it's ready to go. And by the time 7 a.m. hits, I am swimming by the time my eyes open. And it's one of those funny things that happens with me. Usually when it starts running in those 2 hours, it's a reel of my day before and what I should have said to those people. I'm the kind of guy that even into my 20s, I would think about in fights I got into in third grade. You know, I'm that guy. I think back to what I should have said to that guy and what I really should have said, and maybe she wouldn't have ignored me if I'd have said this. You know, I constantly think of things like that. And I go back to situations, and I'm the guy who replays the situation over and over. It's like when you got a bad record and all it does is skip, skip, skip. That's what it's like up here with me. And what happens to a guy like me when I get into that type of mind frame, when I get into that type of movement where things just seem to keep skipping and skipping and staying in the same spot, I tend to focus on them. And when I tend to focus on something, it's like a microscope for me. And I get in and I will look at the smallest and tiniest detail. The problem is that when you're sober, you don't have anything to blame that on. See, I could blame it on other stuff, you know. When you've done so much speed, you want to tear everything apart and find out how it works, you know. I do that without the speed, only it's you and your program, you know. I'm like, oh, this guy does this and Of course he's miserable. He's not working with enough newcomers. He needs to do it like this, you know. And I get in there and I just start tearing apart your program, and I'll tear apart everything about you. I am. In the doctor's opinion, it describes the phenomenon of craving that happens, and I talked about it last night. That happens when I take a drink of alcohol. This reaction happens within my body that causes me to just keep going on that deal. No matter what, I don't seem to be able to put the drink down once it's in my system. I have the phenomenon of craving of judgment. That happens with me. As soon as and it starts off with something small like, what a jerk. And then from there, I'm sitting there in the middle of the room one night, rocking back and forth going, why doesn't anybody like me today? I want to die, you know? And that's where it takes me. And it starts in very small pieces because, see, in my mind, my judgment becomes resentment. My judgment is fear. All of those things, my character defects seem to be tied directly to my judgment of other people, other programs, other types of Alcoholics Anonymous. My judgment seems to be attached to every aspect of my life. And I didn't know how to be rid of this judgment. My sponsor calls it the judgment machine. And it's funny because through the process and the steps that I'm going to get into in just a few minutes here of what I did to really effectively go in and try to dismantle this thing, it's really a funny deal because I went through some serious, serious work on that. Got into it heavy and just dismantled this thing and then went forward. And then I went down and saw my sponsor speak in Nebraska about 4.5 months after I'd really done some serious step work on this. And what had happened was, as I was going this way and moving forward, I didn't realize somebody snuck behind me and put that machine right back together when I wasn't looking. So I'm out here doing all this stuff, moving forward, and I'm like, I'm not judging. Not again. I've already done that judgment thing. It almost killed me. There's no way I'm going to do that again. And I'm out here, and I'm going, you know, those other people in AA, and anytime I'm starting to refer to people in AA as those other people, it's because I've pulled myself and separated myself from them generally. And I tend to do that in all areas of my life because there's a peace within me that is so sick that really honestly believed for an amount of time that my way of doing AA was the only one. And if you would just understand that and do AA like me, we'd all get along, you know, and then we wouldn't have this problem, see? And what I was telling you guys last night a little bit, my sponsor gives out these awards every year. We all get together with him and in December, and he does this award thing every single year, and it's funny awards. I mean, the guys who have, like, the biggest problem with this, they get one thing, and, you know, and one guy had a bad problem with relationships, so you know, I think Bob gave him, like, some kind of pill that would kill his sex drive or something, and, I mean, just terrible stuff. I got the Bill Wilson Award last year. That's not a prestigious award. It isn't like the person who's done the most to help people in AA. It's the person that actually believes that he's Bill. That's the award I got. And it's a mask of Bill Wilson. So what you don't understand is I'm holding this Bill Wilson mask up behind my body. So anybody that would see a picture of that would be like, man, Bill's been working out, you know, and tanning. So it's one of those deals where I get this award, and it's one of those sick pieces of me, because in order to really honestly get an award like that, you have to do certain things. Some of the things you have to do is believe in the fiber of your being that AA would die without you. You have to believe in the fiber of your soul that no matter what, they would never be able to replace the impact that you've had on Alcoholics Anonymous. You have to honestly think that as you sit in AA conferences that you're not asked to speak at, how much better the conference would be if you were speaking there. And you have to honestly believe beyond a shadow of a doubt, no matter what, that if Bill really would have been thinking correctly, he'd be doing AA just like you. That's what happens to me when I'm stuck in judgment. And it's a sick, sick thing. And when I say it's sick, the reason why it's so horrible is because I never saw it coming. I was walking right out of Alcoholics Anonymous and didn't even know it. And it's funny, my sponsor uses an analogy of you don't know you have the wallet. And I love that analogy because for me, it's like I reached down on your seat and I picked up your wallet and I'm holding it in my hand, you know? And you're looking at me, you're like, dude, you got my wallet. And I'm like, I ain't got your wallet. You're like, no, it's right there. What's right there? And I am oblivious to the fact that I have now stolen your possessions. I have now taken from you. I don't even know I've got the wallet. I don't even know it. I don't even know I'm judging when I'm doing it. What I think I'm doing is being helpful. I think that by me coming up to you and saying, listen, man, you should really get into this aspect of the steps, and these newcomers over here, why don't you go talk to one of them, please? Can you do that for me? That guy over there, he's lonely. He needs your help. You know, I think I'm being helpful. What I'm doing is saying, your program sucks. You should do it just like I'm telling you to do. And I don't understand that. I don't understand how I do it. I don't understand why I do it. I don't understand anything because I'm stuck in the middle of it and I can't see it. I can't look in the mirror and see myself as this judgmental person because my intentions are good. My intentions are always good. So what happened to me was, and I touched on it a little bit last night, I had separated myself from Alcoholics Anonymous in a very, very bad way. I have this home group that I'm a member of, and that group is full of a lot of amazing, dynamic, wonderful members of AA. The problem is they are amazing, dynamic, wonderful members of AA who didn't do AA just like me. So what happened is no matter what they did, it was never good enough. I'm the guy that if I want a pony for my birthday, and I get the pony, and I'm upset because it's not the right color, you know? or because you guys brought me one of those little Icelandic ponies to throw me off, you know? I'm upset because you gave me one of them. I didn't say what kind, you know? I want a great big one with a Western saddle with a horn you can hold on to, because there's nothing there to keep you, you guys know what I mean. Those saddles aren't comfortable, especially when you got a butt as wide as mine, like one cheek goes on them. I mean, those things are small. They're like for kids, you know? And I got this problem with it because nothing seems to be good enough for me. And what happens is when you live a life where nothing is good enough, you live a life unfulfilled. And you live a life where you become miserable even when you're doing well. And the problem with a guy like me is, I'll tell you guys a story, and this is absolutely terrible. The first time I go to Las Vegas sober is to go out there doing New Year's Eve in 2004. And I'm going out there, and in the Las Vegas airport, if you guys ever get a chance to go there, you come down from the planes, and you hit this little entry level. And there's a picture of this huge horny toad out there. I mean, this thing is gigantic, and it's got, but it looks just like the real thing. And I see this horny toad, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I want to get a picture with this thing, you know? There's a part of me that always wants to have a significant snapshot of everywhere I've been, you know, because I think I'm very photogenic. And I'm going through, and I'm going to do this deal with this picture with this horny toad, and I'm excited, and I'm ready to go, and I'm like, yeah. And I grab the guys, and I'm like, let's go get your pictures. And they said, man, we'll get it on the way out. Let's just go get our bags and get moving. And I'm like, all right, you know, we'll get it on the way out. So I go through, and we spend this almost week in Las Vegas, and we come back out, and we're going back through the airport, and you got to go right back up those same escalators, and here's the horny toad. Now, what has happened is me, this guy's sponsor, and these other two guys in AA that I know, we're sick of spending time together is what happens, you know? I mean, I miss my wife, and I'm sleeping next to these guys, you know, and they stink, you know, and it's just bad. And we're getting there, and I go, hey, it's pitcher time. And they go, no. And they go up the escalator. I threw a fit like a child in the middle of the deal. And I start, the things that I'm thinking, I start saying, and I'm go, who got all the tickets? Me. I'm the guy who went online and booked everything. You wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for me. And I start outwardly judging all of them, and I'm just like, ugh, and I just lose it. And you should see all the little people scattering, you know? I mean, like these little, and I'm not being, you know, racist or anything, but these little Asian couple was like, I mean, they're like 5'2", and they were just like, ugh, and they just take off running the other way, and people are scattering because the wake of me is on. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm tearing it apart, and I get on the phone. Now, I just left my sponsor an hour ago. And I'm in there, and I'm like, these SOBs, they won't listen. And I'm just losing my mind. And he's sitting there, and he goes, oh, so they won't do what you're telling them to do? I'm like, if these people would just quit putting themselves in a position to be harmed, we wouldn't have this problem. I don't understand where that comes from. The good thing is today I know where it comes from. Just sometimes I don't want to look at it. And the better thing is that today I know that I have a solution for these things. See, I've always had this problem with my family. I grew up with a bad problem growing up with my family. And I had this resentment and I had these judgments against my family that every year when I would go home for Christmas, we'd spend maybe 45 minutes to an hour together. And at the end of that time, the 45 minutes to an hour, I would either be fighting with my brother, arguing with my mother, or disrespecting my dad in some way, shape, or form, no matter what. See, I'm the fly in the ointment. I'm the guy that just doesn't play well with others. I was talking about that last night. I don't know how to interact with these people, and they're good people. But see, I judge them, and I tear apart exactly who and what they are. And I use that against them to feel superior. When you feel as bad as a guy like I do feels when you're like that, you have to find a way to boost yourself up above what else everybody else is doing. So what had happened was, is I went through, and I grew up, and there was some physical abuse, and I hate talking about stuff like that from the podium, but it really ties into this. There was some physical abuse, and there was some emotional abuse, and there was things that you just don't want to talk about, things you just don't want to go through. And I used that against my parents. See, what happened is, a guy like me, I go through and I start doing that kind of stuff, and I looked at them, and I went, look at you. You're terrible. You're absolutely terrible people. And I would turn around and treat them in that same manner. And I got into pages 66 and 67 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous with my sponsor. And there's some parts there that tie into the resentment section. And he really used that resentment section with me because my judgment seems to tie directly to it. And what I was able to do is I was able to go in on those pages, and I was able to really look at a few things. And the few things that really brought to me was, it says, though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. Well, last night when I was telling my story, there's a part of my story that's terrible. And it's a part towards right as I'm getting ready one night to kill myself, because I just grabbed my daughter and screamed in her face and shook her and made her terrified of me. And because 2 days later I grabbed my wife for screwing up the toilet and I threw her across the bathroom. See, what I didn't remember was during that time in my life, that's the first time I've ever laid my hands on a woman, ever in my life. I did it sober. And the reason why that was so terrible is because my parents were in a knockdown, drag-out fight one day, and I stepped between them, and I threw my dad into one room, and I threw my mom into another room, and I looked at them both, and I told them they were horrible parents, and I'd never be like them. And that judgment came full circle, and I had to see myself as them. And I had to see myself as who those people really had become. And who they had become was two people that had this son in their lives that was tearing them apart, that had this kid that acted out and acted horrible to people all the time. I was disrespectful. I was arrogant. I was constantly in fights. I was constantly in trouble with the police. I was constantly getting threatened to go here or there. I had people looking for me. I'm getting into really, really bad stuff with the wrong people, and my family just wants to have their son back. But instead, what they've gotten is a demon that has been unfortunately placed in their lives to destroy them. And I always looked at it as their fault. I always looked at it as them. And the thing that popped into my head was, when I really looked at how I had been judging my family for all these years, for not being good enough, for not being loving enough, for hitting me too much, for not understanding and giving me hugs more, because loving hands don't hit, you know. instead of them not giving me those things I thought I really needed, when I really looked at who I was, what ended up happening was, as I looked and I just started to cry, and I went, God, I'd have beat me too. I would have. Because they were so frustrated with what I had become. And it's funny because I'm the guy that looks for the pieces in you that I hate in me, and then I judge you for having them. I'm that guy. So if you're a little arrogant, I'm like, can you check this guy out, how arrogant this jerk is, you know? I don't realize that I'm looking in the mirror, you know, the mirror of my soul, because that's what's inside of me. Did you see that guy over there? Did you hear how judgmental he was being, you know? I pick it up in other people in a minute, you know, but I can't see it in me. And I will, the things that I guarantee you, the things that you really don't like in other people, take a real good look at yourself. I mean, seriously. Everything that I seem to not like about somebody, I seem to find in me. I seem to have a piece of me that has judged myself away from the separation between me and you. I seem to place a block between me and you. The problem with me placing a block between me and you at the same time I place a block between me and God at the exact same moment. Because, see, my direct relationship to him starts with me being able to work with you and get along and help his kids. See, I can pray all I want over and over and over again. If I don't do anything, it's just empty words. Because I have to take an amount of action in order to be able to correct my thinking, correct what I do to hurt and harm others. So I go through and I start doing a lot of this kind of stuff. And the thing that ended up happening for me was is I realized I wasn't treating God's kids very well. I wasn't treating you very well. And I wasn't treating my wife very well. And I wasn't treating my daughter very well. And I wasn't treating anybody that got close to me very well unless other people were watching. See, I look like a great guy when I'm out in public. But you get me behind closed doors and I turn into a monster because I don't think anybody's really watching. And I intimidate people enough to make sure they're not saying anything. And the problem with me being like that is that I spent a lot of time not understanding how I was right there. I spent a lot of time not understanding how I could be doing all this action in AA, answering the phone at 2 a.m, getting involved in general service, sponsoring people, going to conferences, speaking at conferences, doing anything and everything. When you go in and people live on the third floor and you're helping them move that heavy, those heavy sofas that have the beds in them, you know, sofa sleepers. When you're doing that and not even getting paid for it, I wonder how I'm sitting there. Because, see, the thing that I didn't talk about last night is that I got to the point on the outside in Alcoholics Anonymous, I looked really good to a lot of people. But when you're like that and you're doing things like that in your home and you're hurting people like that physically, verbally, the thing that's terrible is I ended up sitting down in my den that night spinning the revolver on my .357, wondering if I should kill myself. When you're 8 years sober and active in Alcoholics Anonymous and doing everything you're asked to do, why do you want to kill yourself? That makes no sense. Why are you sitting there thinking that AA would be better off without you and your family would be better off without you at the same moment that you believe that you're God in the middle of the whole thing? How can those two things exist at once? They exist at the exact same time with me because I forgot about one of the most important rules in Alcoholics Anonymous. I need AA, AA doesn't need me. I need all of you people. I need the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and the action within the books and the action within the steps and all of those things. I need them. They don't need me. Because I'll guarantee if I fell off the face of the earth tomorrow, there'd be somebody that would be doing a job doing everything that I do in AA and probably doing it better. And that's just the honest truth, which is a significant change in my mind. Because see, when I think that I become so important that nobody else in AA can do my thing as good as me, I've got a real problem. I've got a real problem. And when I sit there and I think, you know, if I could just go through and just change a few things in the book the way they really should have been meant to say, then everybody would understand it more, you know? So I think I'll just do that, you know? And I'm sitting there trying to come up with a way to change the way some of the stuff is done in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're doing that, you're in a bad spot. If you're anything like me, maybe you're just one of those people that is great in literature or something and you want to just make it more grammatically correct or something, you know? I want to change the steps so that they glorify me, you know? That's what I like to do. So I went through and I looked at a few things in my life. Some of the things that I looked at were the simple fact, number one, I can't exist in my life living it that way and be happy. I can't be happy like that. What I can be is self-gratified at a few times that I mistake for happiness. I can be like that. But I can't truly be happy. Because to truly be happy, I have to have a sense of freedom. And if I feel like I'm doing time in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not free. If I'm sitting there, I take a lot of meetings into jails and into institutions. And the thing that's funny about jails and institutions is that those guys' insides match their surroundings. They're locked up and they're trapped in here and in here. They're locked in a box. And their surroundings match them. They are likewise locked down. What happens with me is that inside I'm like that, but I'm walking around outside and I wonder why I'm going crazy. Because, see, I look like a guy who's free by my surroundings, but inside I'm trapped because I feel like I'm doing time in Alcoholics Anonymous. I really feel like I'm stuck here because I know if I can't drink again and I know that I know that staying sober seems miserable, the only option seems to spin that revolver on the 357 for a guy like me. That's a lonely place. You know, Jim. When Jim said that, have you ever sat in the middle of a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and felt alone? I have. I'm the kind of guy that can sit with his family and feel alone when I'm judging like that. I'm the kind of guy that can be in the middle of an American football game that has 100,000 people in the stands and feel like I'm the only one sitting here. I get that into my head in judgment. And it's funny because the people I started tearing apart, unfortunately, were people that I needed. They were my friends. They were the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that I had grown up with, that at one time I was tight with. Guys that I grew up with before I even got to AA. Guys I used to drink with that came into AA before me. And I'm looking at them and I'm wondering why we're not hanging out anymore. And I'm wondering why nobody just stops by anymore to see me. And I'm wondering why it seems, and it just seems, that other people seem to have other stuff going on, and I don't seem to get to know about it. It's like, oh, yeah, and I'll walk up, and they'll be talking about this great time they'd had together. And I'm like, hey, when was that? And they were like, yesterday. And I was like, oh. And I turn away. And my feelings got hurt really bad a couple times in the last year. I mean, really, really bad. Now, I put myself in a position to be hurt that way by my actions, but it didn't make it any better. And I called my sponsor on one occasion that was specifically very hurtful to me. I cried because I felt alone and I'd been doing so well not to judge people, and they didn't see how wonderful I'd become. And he said, I'm going to be up there in September. And I said, yeah, I know. He said, well, I tell you what we're going to do. He said, we're going to rent one of those big bouncy things that they put kids in and some clowns that make balloon animals. And we're going to invite all of them, but we're going to make them all stand on the other side of the fence and watch us all having fun and teach them all a lesson. For a moment, I thought he was serious, and I got really excited. And he tells me to do things that make absolutely no sense. He says, I'm one of these guys that like to have my way all the time. I love to have my way. When I get my way, it's like finding $100 on the street corner. You know, it's like, yeah, you know? And when I get my way, it's like that. And I go, and this just isn't going my way. And he goes, you know what the easiest way to not get your way, to not, do you know what the easiest thing to do about getting your way is? And I'm like, oh, he's going to give me a trick here. You mean I'm going to get my way? And he goes, oh, yeah, absolutely. I go, how do I do that? And he says, not to have a way. I'm like, what? What do you mean don't have a way? How am I supposed to get the things I want? And he goes, well, God will provide them. That is not cool, man, you know? I mean, and he tells me to do stuff like that, and I'll tell guys I sponsor that, and they go, well, how do you do that? And I'm like, I'm still trying to figure it out real good myself, but if you figure it out, let me know so I can tell Bob I got it done, you know? And I sit there, and I'm like, that isn't fair, you know? It's not fair. He goes, a fair is where you go to eat hot dogs and ride the Ferris wheel. He said, that life isn't about being fair. And I'm like, ugh, and it just frustrates me. What I want to hear from him when I'm like that is, Kelvin, never has someone done so much for so many and receive so little in return as you, you know? That's what I want to hear. I mean, I really want to hear that. What I get is don't have a way. I figured out just as the other night as we were sitting around, and it's funny. I go somewhere in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't think I'd have figured this out. But I just figured it out here in Iceland. I figured it out how I could intellectualize what he was saying. See, what happens is that when I'm busy trying to get my will, it doesn't seem like I get my way. When I'm busy trying to invoke my will on you or trying to get you to do things a certain way that I think it should be done, that's when I seem not to get my way. What happens is if I stay busy doing God's will, if I stay busy helping his kids and doing things to serve other people and doing things for you, I seem to get my way. Because my way and God's way seem to be intertwined, because I seem to get satisfaction when I'm doing his will. That's what seems to fill the hole. That's what seems, when he gets in there and fills that hole up, it seems that my way, it seems like I get my way. It really seems like that. But what I'm really getting is God's way. And I never understood how those two could coexist. Because I always, like I was saying last night, I'd always seen God as this vengeful person coming down with the lightning and the flooding the earth and kill us all if we don't do what he says. See, I figured out on page 62 where it says, first of all, I have to quit playing God, it doesn't work. I figured out why I can't play God. See, when I think of God in the Old Testament sense of being vengeful and punishing and judgmental, I can be God if I think of him in that way. Because see, I can be believe me, I can be as judgmental as God. I can be as vengeful. I can be as punishing. I can be as destructive. Just watch me. I'll tear a family in two. I'll destroy a young girl's dreams. I'll go through and I'll beat people until they're disfigured. Just watch me. I can be vengeful. I will be the hand of God. But the funny thing is I can't play God because I can't be that loving. I can't be that tolerant. I can't be that kind. And I can't be that unjudgmental. That's why I can't play God. Because I can't be that all the time. And the times that I am that is when I seem to be full inside. And the times that I get like that the most is when I seem to be sitting across from a new alcoholic and going through the solution based in this book and based on my experience and based in the actions that I take in Alcoholics Anonymous. It really seems that when I'm sitting across from him, I seem to get full inside. And when you're sitting there with somebody and you watch the lights come on, it literally almost brings me to tears. Because I know he's now got a shot at not having to be as miserable as me. I know he's got a shot in life today that he doesn't have. And maybe his family will get better like mine did. And maybe he'll find a woman that'll love him. And maybe he'll be able to experience the great gifts in life that I seem to take for granted every single time I step back into my will and my judgment. Every time. Instead, I get an opportunity to work with this guy and see maybe he'll be able to get away from some of that. You know, I used to always take credit for how the guys I sponsored did. You know, I was one of those guys, well, he's over there working with newcomers. He gets an A today, you know? And I would do that kind of stuff. I was an arrogant, judgmental prick. I was terrible. I really was. And the thing is that I can become like that again real quickly. I have to take daily actions. The thing that's funny, and I do a lot of stuff with step 10 today, and it's step 10's a hard thing to do if you're really not humble. I mean, it really is. And it's a hard thing to do when you're disconnected from God. It really, really is. Because, see, there's this thing in there, it says, we alcoholics like success. We seem to drink of it as a wine, you know? And I imagine me drinking a wine. My idea of a good wine, it comes in a box, you know? And I just seem to just pull it down and, success. And I've suffered from big shotism. I like to think I'm more important than I really am. And that deal in step 10 that happens for me when I really get into it is it all involves me not having a way. And I couldn't figure that out for the longest time of what that really meant. And it was funny because what ended up happening to me was, is I saw a couple things. And what it said was, it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. It's real easy for me to step back into my old way of thinking. It says, we're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. When I'm disconnected from God, I don't have a spiritual condition. When I'm disconnected from God, I'm not connected to anything at all. It says, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. It's a short prayer there. So these are the thoughts which must go with us constantly. What happens is that I look at that word, and I always think that says conveniently. I do. I don't want to do it all the time. I want to do it when it serves me, you know? But it doesn't. It says constantly. And it says, we can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is a proper use of the will. I can use my willpower to help God get his way, which helps me get my way, so I don't have to have a way. Isn't that great? You know? I didn't understand how it all connected. I didn't understand it one bit. But what happened is that I take actions towards the understanding of it. See, for me, I can't think my way into better living. I have to live my way into better thinking. I'm the guy that has to take the action, take the action, take the action. And then all of a sudden, bing, the light comes on. And I go, it was that simple all along, huh? You know? I'm one of those, I'm like a really smart, dumb guy, you know? You know? I just really am. You know, I'm just, da, 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 blink. Oh, that's what he meant, you know? And it's one of those things that has really happened. And I'm going to close with this. I've got about 4 minutes left. I do some actions every day. And it's funny because I've had a lot of stuff happening in my life in the last 6 months especially that has really been tough to watch happen. It's really been hard to be with people and see people that you love and you care about slipping away. And to really try to go through and understand some things. And I have to do some actions every day. And one of the actions that I do every day is the 11th step. And I get down to pages 86, 87, and 88. And I start going through and I start looking at some of this kind of stuff. And I also do a little bit of meditation on the fear section of the book. Remember last night I said that my life is controlled, dominated, and ran by fear. Well, there's a little thing in the fear section that I really, really, really like. And it says, this book isn't marked out. You guys need to remark, like have the books marked if I'm going to borrow a book from now on, just like mine so that it's right. And what it says is, we are in the world to play the role he assigns. The role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. And then there's another spot in the next paragraph that says, we ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. Well, when I hear role, my sponsor asked me if I've ever done any acting. He said, have you ever acted before? And when I was a kid and I was in a couple things, when I was in high school, I tried to do the drama club thing because there's some hot girls in there that I wanted to get with, and they threw me out. And I started thinking of the way the actor prepares for his day. And he said, Kelvin, you have to think about and act like a guy who's surrendered. Who's surrendered. And I said, okay. He said, you have to act like a guy who's not controlled and dominated and ran by fear. I said, okay. That's great. Thanks. You know. He said, and you have to act like a guy who's not judging everybody. And you have to act like a guy who's not doing this. And he started going through and giving me some specific examples. So I took it to the next step and I started thinking about it. And if you really look at actors, the way that they do things, actors are pretty amazing people. That's why not every one of us can be successfully one. When they do things, the first thing that they really get into is their script. And they study the script and they learn the words and they learn what the base of their material is. I kind of look at this as a script, you know? So I'm in that thing every day. I read my big book every day. Every day. And the next thing that I have to do is that once I'm looking at the script and start doing that stuff real well, and I really get into that, one of the other things that has to happen in the fact of being an actor is they do what's called a role play, or they study a role. And the way that they study that, actors aren't as wonderful as everybody thinks they are. If they're playing a homicidal killer maniac, they go sit down with one for a while that's convicted sitting in prison. So they go through and they spend time with a person who is exactly the thing that they want to be like in this movie. They spend a phenomenal amount of time with them and then literally become the person. So I do that. I follow my sponsor. I follow other people in Alcoholics Anonymous who are taking actions that I respect. And I do those things. And I spend time with the person who's really doing the role. And then I have to get into character. And as I sit there, I imagine and I go through and I pull it all in a little piece at a time and I go, okay, I've got to be like this. I have to be like a person who is loving, tolerant, and kind. I have to be like a person who isn't being judgmental and today isn't being selfish. And then I start going through and I start thinking of how I'm going to do that. And then the last thing that always happens before they take a movie is that little thing drops. And it hits and they say, action. So I can think about it all I want. I can prepare all I want. I can follow the people all I want. If I don't put it into practical application and do it, the movie never gets shot. If I don't drop the hammer and say, action, and do it, because it tells me that I have to be as God would have me. I have to be that, which means I have to take action towards it. And my life today is spent doing that the best of my ability. There's days I do it really good, and I feel connected, and I feel like I'm in the midst of a presence of something greater than me. And there's days that I wake up and I just there. I did it a few months ago. I was upset with God. I don't know if anybody else here gets mad at God, but I do once in a while. And I got up that morning, and I keep my big book on a little stack of boxes that I keep in my room. Little decorative boxes, and I keep my book right there. And I got up that morning, and the day before had been crap, and my week before had been crap because I wasn't getting my way. And I looked at that book, and I went, and I literally out loud said, no! And I went to the bathroom, and I brushed my teeth like this. And I spent my day brushing my teeth like this, you know? I was on edge with everybody. I was on the muscle with everybody the entire day. And finally, later on that afternoon, I got to go through some pain, you know. I got to go through a little pain. And later on that day, I went through and I called my sponsor up. And I'm like, I didn't even pray today. And he goes, well, what's wrong with doing it right now? And I go, what? And he made me pray on the phone with him right there on the spot, you know. And I'm like, fine, I'll do it, you know. And I started feeling a little bit better, you know. And I went home and I apologized to my wife for being a jerk and for being short and sharp with her that morning. She asked me a question for which I had no answer. And I took it out on her and told her that how can she expect me to be perfect? Leave me alone. I've got important things to do. And I'm a guy that's got to go through pain to take action. It's a part in the 12 and 12. Most everything I do comes out of the book. And there's pieces of the 12 and 12 that I really like. And the one piece of it that I really like is it says, pain is the touchstone of spiritual growth. See, I didn't understand what a touchstone was. My sponsor explained it to me. It was a stone that back in the medieval times that the blacksmiths would get. And what would happen is they would fire these blades and fire the blades and get them banged out. And then they would take that sword and they'd slam it on this perfect stone. And if the sword didn't bend or shatter, they would give it to the warriors to take out into battle. And if it shattered, then of course it wasn't used. And they would go back to work. My pain, I slam myself against this touchstone of my judgment. I slam this self against this touchstone of my ego and my resentment. I slam myself against it, and I don't break most days. I get dinged up. I get bent a little bit. And I keep going back into it. Pain has always been my context of spiritual growth in my life. Has to be. Because I have to go through an amount of that to be able to willing to change my actions. I have to be able to go through that in order to be willing to stop hurting you and stop hurting me. So I use that pain today, and I try to stay away from it because it really sucks getting banged against something hard, you know? I mean, it was like when I got thrown off that horse, when I landed, it was just really great that all those sharp, pointy rocks were there to break my fall, you know? And it was like that. I mean, that's how I feel when I get judging people real heavy. It's like, no, whack. Oh, man. And you try to breathe, you know, because everything just came out of you. And you get up, and I'm all muddy, and I'm all covered in crap. And my sponsee that's with me has a camera, and he's going, and he's snapping pictures, and everybody, and Bobby's trying not to laugh, you know, and I'm just like, that's how it feels when I'm doing my will and trying to get my way. And what I can honestly say is that today, I do the best I can. I'm not an expert on anything here. It's my experience that brings me to the point that I'm at today. It's trial by fire for me. And I try to be the best member of AA I can be, which is no better than you, which is no less than you, and which allows me to connect to you and find the God within you that relates and touches the God within me. Thank you for letting me share.